All participants, please stand by. Your meeting is ready to begin. Please be advised that this conference call is being recorded. Good day and welcome to the Northwest Company, Inc. Second Quarter Results Conference Call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Mr. Edward Kennedy, President and Chief Executive Officer. Mr. Kennedy, please go ahead.
Good morning and welcome to our second quarter conference call. Joining me this morning are John King, our Chief Financial Officer, and Amanda Sutton, who is our VP Legal and Corporate Secretary. Before I get into the call, I'll ask Amanda to read our disclaimer transcript.
Thank you, Edward. Before we begin, I remind you that certain information presented today may constitute forward-looking statements. Such statements reflect Northwest's current expectations, estimates, projections, and assumptions. These forward-looking statements are not guarantees of future performance and are subject to certain risks which could cause actual performance and financial results in the future to vary materially from those contemplated in the forward-looking statements. For additional information on these risks, please see Northwest Annual Information Form and its MD&A under the heading Risk Factors. Edward?
Thanks, Amanda. So I'll go through the key points in the quarter and then, as usual, open the call for our questions. A lot of what happened in the second quarter was similar to the first in the sense that we've got two very distinct stories in our business on the from the banner performance side. Our core northern businesses had another strong quarter. Our comps were in the between the 3.5-5% range across food and general merchandise in the north, and as we've said before, I've commented on the general economic conditions are favorable for us, and that includes Alaska, which had a strong fishing season. And as we head into the PFD, which is expected to be equal to last year's, we're certainly optimistic that whether it's Northern Canada with infrastructure spending, mining activity, we should be going for sales, managing the business on the margin side with the expenses controlled, but really in a get sales mode. And that's the way we look at things. And with the work that we're doing in different areas, it seems to be paying off. And then longer term, we continue to build our business in other ways. If I skip down to the Caribbean, there's a market by market story there because of the distinct nature of the economies, but also of the competitive situations. Overall, our what we call our call or cost you less competitive strategy, which focuses on signature categories, everything from fresh produce and meat all the way into baby and actually liquor. These have all been strong drivers for us, and although Call came a little short of plan, they were up nicely to last year, as was our business in the British Virgin Islands. If there's a soft spot in Cost-U-Less, it was on the Pacific side, a little bit in Fiji and in American Samoa. So when we step back and look at the business and our remote retailing strength and how it's been brought to market, we're generally pleased. There's always room for improvement, but we like the way the trend is going. Before talking about Giant Tiger, I just want to talk about costs, what we refer to as non-store costs, the margin, operating margin gains above LY for all of our banners, ex-Giant Tiger, are before admin. We have talked about I'm not sure what the right term is anymore, whether they're unusual or one-time or restructuring, but as we, behind the scenes, change our business so that we can run it more localized, put more authority closer to the regions that we do business in, there has been a cost attached to that. I mean, we've disclosed and talked about the relocation of our office, store support office in Seattle, actually back up to Anchorage, and then creating an office in Florida. That's been going along fine from the pacing of it and the staffing. There's a few key roles we still need to fill, but it's also involved the relocation and some people not in the business that were in the business before. So between relocation and termination, some of those costs have spilled back into Canada. There have been some changes in Canada as well. But perhaps we should have been clearer on that at the last quarter, that, you know, where those costs would be incurred, and a little higher than we might have thought in June as well. But not out of control, but there's a timing factor there. So certainly that was I think we talked about in the MD&A and the press release, $3.5 million is the range of those kinds of costs that were incurred. So some of that will carry forward. We're going to have some more of that cost cleaned up in Q3, and then we'll be stable as far as it goes with our regional approach to the business and the office relocations to Anchorage and Florida. So now to Giant Tiger. Giant Tiger clearly underperformed again. It was a drag for us. If I break it down, I'd say that weak seasonal performance hurt us, and that's kind of the stir that mixes the drink, in the sense of you need to have seasonal sales driving margin dollars. We had some very strong comps against us in May, which were tough to beat. June was very, very poor weather-wise. That's our prime selling season. And then July, we had great weather, and it was markdown season. But behind beneath the surface there, we've had to take a hard look at how we're running the stores. We actually have made a management change this week on the leadership side of Giant Tiger. And the operationalization of the Giant Tiger system and how we can be better at that, and also lean into Giant Tiger to support us. You've heard some of these things before. A lot of it is block and tackle at store level. We don't fundamentally believe that the Giant Tiger as a store concept is fatally flawed. It doesn't mean it's the only way those stores can be run as Giant Tigers, but it is something that we're not giving up on at all that way. We just know that whatever we do, whatever the stores are, they have to be well executed, and we think we've dropped the ball there. And the change we've made at the leadership level isn't the be-all and the end-all. We all own this and have to come up with better execution. So specifically to seasonal, a lot of it has to do with our markdown management, our ordering. There's some things that backed up a bit before I go on. Indirect effects of China shipping rates with the tariff crunch avoidance and some delays there. But back in what we can control, it's the day-to-day work we take on with our fashion managers on the floor, our store managers, the field support, to make sure we're ordering the right mix. We're getting behind the key items that will drive the business. We're not shy on that. Sometimes when you're not a franchise, you can be shy. There's no excuse, though. We've done very, very well with this model in the past. We get back to some of the basics on how that can work for us now and in the future. And that carries forward to the other parts of the hard goods and soft goods part of the business. It's not just seasonal. Window coverings is a huge business at Giant Tiger across Canada, and we need to get our share. There's no reason we can't, but we have to commit to the space and the quantification that will drive that business. So these are all things that's sometimes easier said than done. The individual that's coming in to run the division for us did run the division for over 10 years during a much more profitable growing phase. And we believe he's the right fit for getting back to some of these disciplines that will drive our bottom line, or protect our bottom line, but also protect our market share. On the food side, so the other half of the business, much lower margin, it's been at risk for a while. I think at this point that we've overmanaged the business by trying a lot of different things that impacted margin and have not driven the traffic to the extent that they were expected to. In this case, food has to be stabilized in terms of shrink. Some of the things, again, that we've tried have cost us. Our fresh meat we overinvested in that program, put it into all the stores, and we've paid a price in the first half of our promotional strategies. We're also costly. So we're pulling back on that and, again, trying to realizing that food still has a very important traffic driving role, but not trying to get more out of it than it deserves. And and making sure that our focus on the hard goods and soft goods side of the business is where it needs to be. From a timing standpoint, although you heard me say this in June, and I'm disappointed that I got it wrong, of course, that I couldn't, I would not have forecasted as tough a quarter that we just had, and I'm not forecasting that for Q3 as we model this out and we look at our comps from last year, which were very bad. We don't see that kind of a drag, the magnitude of the drag on performance that we had. And just to remind investors, I mean, Giant Tiger does a number of things with Northwest. I commented at our annual meeting that it wasn't core in terms of our competencies. And you can draw all kinds of conclusions from that, except that it puts it in a tougher situation in terms of focus. And we have to delegate that focus. We have to lean into GT and their expertise and not assume that we have it, because there's enough going on in the life of Northwest to build up proprietary expertise there vis-a-vis what we're paying Giant Tiger for. But it still is something that in the totality, and I'll talk about the back end of the business, the buying volume it creates for us, the distribution efficiencies, that is material in terms of being a benefit. So we like the volume. We obviously want it to be more profitable. The delta on that decline in profitability has been painful for us in terms of overall results, but we also take a long-term view. We hope our investors do as well. We know we have a very solid business. We've got fantastic, we think, locations with our stores. We've built them out very thoughtfully in Western Canada. We've got good store teams, and we think it's that collection of stores, locations, is still very, very valuable. And then, it drives efficiencies in the rest of our business, which are sometimes hard to attain given the wide breadth of how we operate. So we certainly don't take that for granted, and we put the right amount of value against that in terms of protecting it. So that's where Giant Tiger sits. It's a focus, and without being a total distraction from the other very attractive upsides we have in our business. And I think we have the right balance in place, and we're going to keep our foot down on performance improvements. When I look at Q3, Q4, I see us with much more upside vis-a-vis the first two quarters of the year in terms of Giant Tiger performance. So that's the comment that I'll make right now at GT, and of course, be fully prepared to answer any questions you have. There weren't a lot of other focus highlights. We opened our 45th Giant Tiger store in North Battleford. I'll just point out that we are continue to be optimistic and positive about our more northern and rural Giant Tiger locations, and this would be one of those. We have another one opening in Meadow Lake, Saskatchewan, which we think will be very successful. Is a hub for north central Saskatchewan. Coming up in Q4. I think with that, with those comments, operator, I'll now open the call for questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're joining us today using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. A voice prompt on your phone line will indicate when your line is open. We do ask that you please state your name and your company name before posing your question. Again, that is the star key followed by the digit 1. We'll hear from your first caller. Please go ahead.
Hey, it's Matt Bank at CIBC. Can you hear me?
Good morning, Matt.
Hey. Hey, good morning. I guess I wanted to start talking about the insurance commentary you had in your outlook. So we already knew that it cost $4 million more this year, but you suggested that maybe costs could rise further. Could you just talk a bit more about how you see insurance costs playing out in future years? And is there a chance that you could lose insurance on certain assets that are currently insured and how all that would look?
Sure, I'll take that, Matt. Yeah, as I put in the as we put in the outlook there, we are seeing increasing pressures on insurance, both from a premium perspective and a reduction in capacity in writing insurance. And if you look at what's happened with, you know, just recently with Hurricane Dorian, for example, and the devastation that has happened, insurance companies are cutting back on how much insurance they're going to be writing in those regions, particularly the Caribbean. So that in and of itself, I think, is going to put more pressure on premiums, as will the losses coming out of not only Hurricane Dorian, but go back to Irma and Maria, et cetera. So I do see continued pressure on insurance premiums. How much that will be going forward is not known yet. We've locked in most of our insurance premiums for the year. We do have some policies that renewed late Q2 and some that will renew in Q3, so we'll get a little bit more visibility, you know, in Q3 on that piece of it. But I do see premiums, they're not going down, that's for sure. It's a question of how much they go up. And so that's point one. Point two, I think it's important to focus on or mention what we can control in our business. And we're very focused on loss control. We've talked about in the report increasing the resiliency of our stores in the Caribbean to a Category 5 hurricane level. In northern Canada, we've conducted loss mitigation audits from a fire risk perspective, making changes there. So everything that we can do to control and reduce the risk of loss, that's what we're doing. But there's some global conditions here in insurance that are, you know, continuing to be at play.
Okay, and then in terms of the capital investment on your end, is there an estimate you could provide in terms of, you know, annual CapEx or anything like that in terms of weatherproofing your assets?
The amount of the program, maybe John, you can comment how much we spent this year and what we're forecasting next year for that. It's not significant, but it's a few million dollars.
Yeah, it would be like the hurricane resiliency piece is this year, and that once we do that, then that'll be behind us. It's about $3 million Canadian on that piece of it. Ongoing in Canada, we would expect that CapEx to run around $2 to $3 million in terms of Northern Canada. And I think that work will continue on certainly through this year and into next year as well.
Okay, and then I want to shift to Giant Tiger. I guess first is, are you still playing with the strategy and the store model in Giant Tiger, or, you know, with the new leader, are you getting towards a point where you're looking to execute on the plan?
The plan has been focused on for about two quarters already, and the main part to it is gap closing, like type stores in Giant Tiger East that we think are should be the ones that we chase in terms of performance and execution. So we break down where there's a gap. It could be by a class, department, the category. It could do with margin rate or sales per store, and we get further into the details of why we're falling short on what should be a comparable performance. That's been going on. What we're not happy with is the focus and execution at store level, and the way we're structured on this. We have a president of Canadian Retail with two divisions, Northern Canada Retail and Giant Tiger, essentially. And his time has been pulled more into GT and then, of course, working with the Giant Tiger team. The leadership change we've made is at the VP of the Giant Tiger team level. And that individual, again, as I mentioned, has a lot of familiarity with the Giant Tiger division, hasn't been directly engaged in it for some time. So, you know, we've given him the accountability to get this plan fully executed, but also to step back a little bit. We don't want to do a complete step back because we think we know what we're supposed to be doing here. But he's the person that's walking the stores all the time, or will be. And if through his eyes, we want to make sure that we haven't missed anything. So I think inevitably there are going to be a few small tweaks to the, to where we focus. But it's not like a, you know, take 3 months and figure this out. We have targets to hit, on a daily basis in some things, and he understands that. So I think it'll be 80% we're doing already better, and 20% if we find some new ideas, we're going to be open to those.
Okay, and when you think about the improvement in Q3 and Q4, is that more about just lapping the easier comparables, or do you expect the execution to improve in the near term?
Yeah, I think I'll expect it to improve. The factor is what's our confidence level near term, right? Medium and long, I know these store assets, I might call them that, park the giant tiger park for a second, are have lots of potential, financial potential. Short term, quarter by quarter, I can't ignore the lapping part. It's very defensive, but it's just downside mitigation. It's just a financial fact, I guess, that you start to bounce along the bottom more or less. So that's behind this. That's there on the forecast side. But, you know, we've learned, and, you know, everybody has gotten more tuned in and experienced on how to manage this, who are directly involved, including the president of Canadian Retail, he's lapped 1 year in his role, and although there's lots of upside in Northern Canada, he knows that the GT has as well. So he's had to learn and adjust. Our EVP of food, who plays a key role in all this, she was new to the business, and there's been some learning and adjustment there, and I think that's part of our situation, is that we've had some new people in roles, and they're very, very capable, but they're still new to the situation. So that, I think that learning gets accelerated, and we, you know, mistakes get fixed quicker and we get dialed in faster. So that gives me more confidence on execution improvement in Q3. But based on what's just happened in Q2, I'm cautious, and so there's the shock absorber is just the weak comps that we're cycling through in terms of downside protection. The upside, I'm still waiting to see this catch hold where we build a momentum on our store execution, and we start to see this turn around and pick up and improve store by store. So I won't say that yet. I haven't seen enough of it.
Thank you.
And as a reminder, that is the star key followed by the digit 1. We'll move to the next caller in the queue. Please go ahead.
Hi, I just want to start by following up on a few of these things. So just to clarify, for Q3 and Q4 in Giant Tiger, you're saying that, you know, the comps are so easy that you should at least be able to do as well as last year, but you're just not sure how much improvement you can get at this stage?
That would be our going-in position on Q3. And Q4, yes.
All right. And sorry, the management change. Who is running Giant Tiger now, and what was he?
His name is Scott McKay, and he was he joined Northwest early 2000s. He's been away from Northwest for 2-3 years. Moved to our international division. He ran Giant Tiger for, I think, about 10 years. And was also a VP of merchandising in Canada and in our international division.
So he was outside the company for the last few years and is coming back in?
Yes.
All right. And you talk about, you know, markdown management issues at Giant Tiger. Can you explain a little bit more about exactly what you're, you know, what the issues were?
Yeah, I mean, it's more aggressive markdowns coming out of June with the weather and having slow traction. I think we've sized that up as being an overcorrection. And I think there was part of this led to our change on the team. I think the team was getting skittish and being long on merchandise coming out of out of the winter and not wanting to be long again going into fall. They certainly aren't that. And then overcorrecting.
Okay. So I guess with the management, is it the management change that you think is going to help correct that, or is it other initiatives being implemented?
Well, beneath the management change are the initiatives, and and we think they're the right ones. So we had, as an example, for the better part of a day with the Giant Tiger executive team that's accountable for buying and merchandising. So we sat down with them and 2 weeks ago and looked at where these gaps are. Most of them were known to us, but, you know, just being very, very dialed in on that. So that plan is being worked. Part of it is prioritization, too, and that was my earlier comment about focusing on soft goods and hard goods and not, I say, over-managing food, not trying to be too aggressive with food promotionally and putting too much emphasis on categories that are riskier, like fresh meat, shifting the manager's attention, making sure that it's on soft goods and hard goods on the floor of the store, and just totally buying into that. So that's a softer thing, of course. But then within the soft goods and hard goods is being very, very focused on which areas of the business we want to make a difference on. Sometimes I feel you could swing a cat and you could hit something that we could improve. And you can, actually, but some things are just bigger than others. So it's that kind of focus. And I think when you have the negative comps and it hurts the business overall, people can start, be careful they're not running around with their heads chopped off and trying to do 10 different things half well. So, of course, that's on everyone, including myself, to make sure that's a steady hand approach. And again, I mean, the translation of what I'm saying now to one of our stores in Winnipeg this morning, there's a lot of people between that. And one of the key drivers or translators is the VP role that actually runs the division. So we want to make sure we have total confidence in that person's ability to put the plans in place. And we weren't there for different reasons until this week, actually.
So when you talk about poor assortment management, that's what you're talking about in terms of your mix between food and GM and the hard and soft goods category.
Yeah, it's where you what you put your display space into. It's where you put your dollars for inventory. It's your commitment to programs that when you track GT success, and it's not that they have success everywhere. But you've got to take advantage of the information that goes with the franchise model and really, really work that hard. And it's a discipline. There's also, you've got to think like an owner. I mean, that's another thing that from day one, we know these stores are corporate stores, that GT has a strong franchise model, but they also run corporate stores. So we've got to make sure that we have the enterprising mentality in our stores. And we're not just directing people to do things. We have strong suggestions, but we also want them to be free to do what they need to do. So part of it is also checking in to make sure that we have very, very strong people, but have we kept their education, their training up on these different areas of the business. So next week they'll be in Ottawa for the managers/owners meeting, and again, it's a chance to catch up on better practices, but we have to do a deeper dive to make sure that our managers understand what the drivers are. And again, that's part of Scott's job beginning this week.
Okay, and kind of outside of Giant Tiger, in your strategy commentary, you talk about moving more authority in the business to closer to the different banners or regions, communities. But in the past, you've also had trouble attracting and keeping strong local management in some of these remote regions.
So, right.
Are you not concerned that moving too much authority into these areas is going to, if you don't have the right people in place, or are you just comfortable now that you have the right people?
Well, if you were a fly on the wall, John, and I would, and the committee would take that, you would have heard that discussion. And you know, John may want to simplify the business further and not give as much authority, not to put him on the spot, but I come from the other side, but absolutely not, I would not put the authority in where the capability doesn't exist yet. So it's a walk and chew gum kind of thing where we know we've got stores that have that capability and stability, so let's double down on their, I use that word, authority, but let them drive more of their, pull more of the merchandise into the store instead of us trying to push it from the central. Where the store doesn't have the capability yet, because of turnover and maybe even fit for role, then we're looking to push that authority down to the regional level. So empower the sales manager for that region or that group of stores to make some of those calls for the stores. The way we see it, at least they're closer to the action than the buyer who's, you know, with them. I still haven't seen yet the software template that localizes the way we want to. So we know where we have to get to, and the incentive is to keep, you know, we look at these stores that have the capability, and that's our number one priority. You've heard me say that for the northern business anyways. And I think what we're finding with Dan McConnell, who's the president international, he's recognizing it wasn't his first priority, but as he's trying to operationalize his competitive strategy in Cullen and really, you know, push that localization into Alaska, it's becoming his. He's finding the right individuals that will come into Alaska, that will be part of our team, super entrepreneurial. And what we're finding is the retail background is increasingly less important than the enterprising mindset. And just the driver that would say, I'm really happy being in this kind of a setting, a little bit of, it's off, obviously we're off the beaten track for some people, even Winnipeg would be looked that way, but certainly Anchorage and where we do business. So really find those folks that like that kind of work and can thrive in it. And we have many, many that do, so we know what it looks like. But no, we're not going to push out, we're not going to localize buying decisions or quantification decisions where we don't have the people yet in place to do it well. So it's going to be a hybrid approach.
All right, I'll let somebody else jump in and get back in the queue. Thank you.
And as a final reminder, that is the star key followed by the digit 1 if you have a question or a comment. We'll move to the next caller. Please state your name and company.
Oh, hi, it's Stephen McLeod from BMO. Morning. I just wanted to follow up on Giant Tiger, and I'm sorry if you covered this in the last set of questions, but can you just talk a little bit? One thing I thought was interesting is in your prepared remarks you talked about overmanaging the food side of the business, and it hasn't really driven traffic. Can you just talk a little bit about, you know, how you are approaching the food side of the Giant Tiger business to drive traffic higher and potentially move?
Well, I think we're recognizing that half the baskets don't have food in them at all, and the crossover is there, but it's in terms of who puts soft goods in a basket as well as picks up produce or cereal. It's a meaningful percentage, but it's not enough that you should just be completely fixated by that. So my point there is that when you tweak something, when you say we took all the fresh meat out of the stores, because actually a decision was made for us 2 years ago by the supplier because they decided to supply China, maybe not the best move now, but so then we're scrambling. We have no supplier for case-ready meat. So then we find one a year later. Meanwhile, we've lived with resetting those 12-foot cases, 8-foot cases with a different offering. And then we're feeling cheap. We want to have our shopper needs meat in their basket. But we're not a full shop. I think that's the other aspect we got to keep reminding ourselves of, is the limited space we have dedicated to food means we're not the only place they're going to go for food. Can we be the first place they go? Aspirationally, yes, but realistically, people are going to come because we've got great food deals, and we're reliably in stock. There's a huge convenience factor to the north, to the Giant Tiger stores, based on where they're located, and our prices are right at a discount level vis-a-vis the other discounters in the market. When you get past that, so for example, in the meat, you put the meat all, now you go back to meat because you've got a supplier, and you remember why meat wasn't so great. It's the ordering, the shrink, both the shrinking it out from a theft standpoint and the waste and spoilage. These kinds of items in our stores, I'm just going to go slight tangent. Given where our stores are located, are highly problematic from a theft standpoint, and we've had a very large spike. We've had to invest in different safety security measures, not just because of fresh meat. It's just because part of it is because of the meth usage in cities like Winnipeg and Saskatoon, or Regina, some of our downtown stores. But having said all that, my point to this is trying to do too much in a very small space for food, trying to replicate too much of a full supermarket and not playing to your strengths. Again, the strengths would be great prices, convenient locations, consistently in stock, solid promotions, but not too cute in terms of couponing and multi-buys, and then move to the rest of your store and do that really well, because there's a lot of gold to mine on the hard goods and soft goods side of the store. So by overmanaging, that's what I mean. I don't want to say much more about that because you can't just leave it alone. It won't run itself. But I think we're recognizing that we want to be able to protect our food margin, be price competitive in the market, but spend our time on the selling floor. And if you put more fresh into your store, by the way, then of course that brings more management. So we had a produce initiative. It was okay. We drove some good produce comps, but we weren't seeing the basket fill up on the other side of the store where there was more money to be made. And the produce is not the margin play that it would be in a supermarket because we only have the best sellers. So, you know, it helped against a lower base, but I think, again, it took a lot of management time to make that produce work well. And we have to be very, very honest about whether it was limited time in the manager's day where they should be getting their sales. So without, you know, I could go on with a few more examples. This is pretty granular, I know, but you just to give you a flavor of how that shift might look going forward.
Okay, that's really helpful. So would you expect then that you would be moving away from, you know, fresh meat and more to...
We're looking at de-skewing stores that are... Some stores will get out of it, but some will be de-skewed in terms of higher shrink items. Certain cuts that just aren't carrying their weight, so simplifying it further, making that call store by store. On the produce side, it's about saying, okay, are we, you know, how much labor can we put into this department? Can we make it simpler? And maybe we've been too, and our the bar we've set is too high given the labor we have to put into it and the attention it requires from the store manager. So it's you know, some of these things you don't go to the other side of the ditch. But it literally comes down to how many hours of the manager's time is involved in this, and then looking to take a hard look at shrink, because that's another point that's been very disappointing, is the shrink that we've taken in food. We should not have done that. I mean, there's some risk you've got to take, but if I look at cumulatively at our year-to-date shrink, it's just unacceptable. So if I go to find out where the culprits are, they're all walking around in the produce and the meat department.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
We'll move to the next caller in the queue. Please go ahead.
Dick Van Elst again. A few more questions. So are you able to quantify at all, like, how much of an impact the markdowns of Giant Tiger had on EBITDA?
I don't think I want to break out the variance is inside of Giant Tiger. I mean, we don't do it in totality, never mind within. But we've highlighted the key factors that affected performance at Giant Tiger. And then it's, you know, in aggregate, it affected our overall performance. But I don't want to get into each of these.
All right. St. Thomas, is that store still on schedule to open in Q4?
Yes, I think it's November. I'm going to be careful whether we've announced it in the market. I don't think we have, but it's opening in Q4.
Okay.
Opening in early Q4, put it that way.
And then you talk about, also in the strategy section, about optimizing your air cargo capability. So what's left to do now that you've got a lot of this stuff in-house and you've got your capacity up?
Sure. I'll just take a couple minutes on that. I think there's a lot to do, as it turns out. We keep turning over ideas, and one is the I've talked before, that sort of more seamless integration where plane-ready pallets go right on the plane, right off the plane. We're looking at, I would just say, without, because some of the stuff is quite innovative and we don't want to talk about it that way specifically, but a big factor for us is optimizing the weight on the plane. And it's just, the point we would say is that when it's a third-party carrier, the weight's not their problem. It's your problem. They charge by it. And the collaboration to optimize is not, there's no natural incentive for that because you pay and but they charge you and you're figuring out stuff in it from a different lens. So we've just had this hammered home through the airline, actually, and they've got very strong people letting us know how this works. And we've got some ideas that we're working on that I think are innovative. They could have a major impact. I'd like to talk more about them as we roll them out. I think that what we're doing is completely lined up with building a superior air cargo capability. And I'll just say on this point that no one's doing this in Northern Canada. Well, Cargojet, of course, is a pretty successful cargo airline in the south. In Alaska, you do see dedicated cargo carriers. Some are multimodal, like Linden Transport is air, road, and water. And it's just the power of focus that we're starting to take advantage of. So I apologize for being general, but I don't want to be more specific for almost competitive reasons. The other point I want to make, it was not your question, but I think I'm going to bring it up, and that is that as we look at air cargo and the size of our business, so we've moved over to Northwest, 100% of the cargo in Northwest Ontario, Manitoba, and regions of Nunavut, with the exception of some communities in Baffin Island. We use a cargo jet plane to fly freight from Winnipeg to Iqaluit as well, which is a big route for us. So now here we are. Now your question was about optimization. Scale is another factor on our minds, and it was always there. And we talked about further phasing, and what I'm describing about cargo growth is now third-party cargo growth. But there's another point to this. We had a plane and we didn't, it wasn't material, but so last year we had the mechanical situation with the ATRs and trying to figure out how to move from a third-party maintenance to an in-house capacity, dealing with all that disruption. This year we had a plane that had an emergency landing in a lake, not an ATR, one of the Basslers. That plane is actually out of the lake, towed back to the airport and down in Wisconsin at the Bassler factory, getting retrofitted. It should be back in the air within 30 days. But it was out of the air. It was in the water for a few weeks, for 4 months. So what? Well, we covered off the fleet, covered that off. The quarter was pretty good. But it's tenuous in the sense that if we have another plane issue, it's not a big fleet. So bigger is better for efficiency, redundancy, risk mitigation, and for growth, because we see the North is very, very active for cargo needs, both sea lift cargo and air. So we're exploring different ways to grow the cargo business for all of those reasons. It's not a dire situation in terms of, are we just upside down on our fleet size? But seeing how this plays out, and I, by the way, the efficiency improvements that I didn't get into detail on are really important, because if you think about weight and the number of, like, it cuts into, it improves the efficiency of the planes, so you can use fundamentally less aircraft. But if an aircraft is down, that's just a risk that we've got to be able to model out and make sure that we've got capacity to cover it off. And again, against that backdrop is that there aren't a lot of planes just hanging around that you can call up. It used to be like that, according to the very experienced folks who run our airline, but it's not as easy today. So you better have some of your own equipment that you can reposition and make sure it's there to carry the Northwest freight or whoever your customers are to live up to your standards of performance. So that's also something that we're looking at in the airline. Now, you can say, well, what is that from a forecast standpoint? It may have some capital investment implications, but it would be for the right reasons to grow the business. This is not defensive. Like, what I'm talking about is to grow profitably, but also in a way that reduces the risk of your current size. And we're having those discussions or planning that with the team. It's all part of the long-range plan anyways, that we would go to third-party customers and add capacity. But having seen now just over a year of some risks that have bit us, some that could have, I'm more convinced than ever that we need to be bigger for all those reasons.
Okay. And I saw that Amazon made an investment in Cargojet. So do you see this getting Amazon into Northern Canada in a more efficient way, and will they become a competitor again in some of these markets?
I don't think so. I think the Iqaluit route today, where money is being lost by someone in buckets through the Amazon Prime membership, there's probably millions of freight dollars being absorbed by someone. I mean, Amazon, Canada Post, I don't know who exactly. That model won't be replicated across the rest of Northern Canada. Iqaluit is a bit exceptional because it has frequency that is justified by the size of the market. When you get into smaller markets, frequency does drop off. Like, we're doing twice a week service. We think that's sufficient and efficient. You can over-service a community and it'll be tough economically and isn't sustainable. So when you get into the size of communities we serve, and you move to an e-com model, and believe me, as you would expect, we're always modeling this. Like, it's not like we have dealers who don't want e-com. We'll do whatever the customers need that works for them. But the frequency part comes up again and again. There's only so much you can do on a frequency basis. And then there's the perishability of the product when it gets to the community. Where is it going to go next, et cetera? So there's challenges to the model, and then it butts up against the way our customers actually shop. And psychographically, when you look at the who shops e-com, it's not our customer. So our goal is to drive down costs. We're not tied to legacy bricks and mortar. We want to lean out our bricks and mortar as much as possible and get our costs continually down, still with you know, the margins that we need to get a return, but grow our share in the north and keep testing and modeling or with the customer. Like, would they forward buy? Will they pantry load if their homes are tight, overcrowded actually? Where's the food going to go? And if you don't have the economic capacity to forward buy it, then our job is to get you the best deal through the bricks and mortar or some combination of it. So I think we're watching what's going on with Amazon and never take them for granted, but you can overreact to this too. So we want to be the best, and I think the other way to look at this, if you looked at the value chain of Northwest, and I try to get into it a bit at the AGM, and so your plan, buy, and move, sell, the retail value chain, we've been increasingly breaking it down within plan, buy, move, and sell. The sell, we feel we have to continue to own, although we could model different compensation and quasi-ownership franchise models with our stores. I talked about decentralization, localization. But that's That's IP, that's competitive advantage for Northwest. On the move, the outbound move, you've heard that before. That is the vertical investment in NSA. That's a very important differentiator. There's a lot of spend in that part of the value chain that you can scale relative to anybody else, actually. When you get to the inbound and the distribution, that's scalable that we, that scale that we can't achieve. You know, to get to an efficient DC, the amount of volume you need to get to automation, robotics, and in the inbound side, containers from China, that's not where we're going to, that's very outsourceable for us with the right partner. So you go through, and then you go to the plan buy. On the plan side, obviously, we should know what people are buying and want to live with in the north. That's unique lifestyle needs. But broad trend, i.e. bicycles, we've got to buy from someone else. So our goal on the, what I call broad trend buying, is to get together with somebody, whether it's Giant Tiger, Canadian Tire, Home Hardware. Today we use some distributors. Our goal is to talk to essentially non-competing retailers and try to strike the right arrangement on the pure buy side, because we'll never match the scale. We can localize it into the right communities and the right quantities. So we take apart each of those parts of our value chain. We're looking at, you know, what do we do ourselves? What down the road do we partner with others on? Certainly, you know, air cargo is one that we want to do ourselves.
Thank you. Just one last, hopefully short question for you. I think in the last quarter conference call, you hinted that you're looking to get a better deal with Giant Tiger East. I'm not sure if I misunderstood you or not, but if that's the case, can you give us any update on that?
I'm sure I didn't say better deal just like that, but the point there is to have good discussions with Giant Tiger that lead to something or go a different direction. And I alluded to, you know, Giant Tiger's got some very good assortments that could work in the north. There are other retailers that we could take their mix into the north, including, and the Caribbean, actually. So it's trying to lean into GT and the way that we're paying the royalties for, that they support our business, that they want us to win, not just collecting the royalties, of course, but they have a very strong stake, I think, in the brand and what's being developed in Western Canada and what can still be developed. So it's just having a very good connection with them. And it's been okay. I mean, we now have a new president at Giant Tiger as of August 1st, and we've had some good discussions. So I'm hoping that we can get more action plans in place. We're not the only thing they do. Of course, they've got other markets in Canada, but it's more optimizing the relationship for both sides. And we both have scale that we can share, potentially. These are things that we're exploring, and we'll see where that goes. But that's kind of the waterfront of our discussions right now.
Thank you.
At this time, there are no additional callers in the queue. I'd like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Kennedy for any additional or closing comments.
I don't have any additional comments. Appreciate all the questions. And if there's follow-up, of course, as usual, please contact either myself or John directly, and we'll do our best to answer your follow-on questions. Thanks very much, and we'll look forward to being on the call with you in December for Q3. Thanks.